long ago. The time was 1970, September 30th, the last time NASCAR ran on a dirt track. Fast forward 51 years, here we are, Bristol, on the dirt track.
Welcome back to episode 3 of Left is Right, a NASCAR podcast. My name is Adam Sands, and I'm joined again by Mr. Matthew Messina and Mr. Britton Davis. What's going on, boys?
Hello, my friend.
What a race at Atlanta, huh?
Dude, not only the race, the extracurricular activities were excellent at Atlanta. Both races were awesome. It was a great watch. It was a great track, and it's just like exactly what we talked about last week, right? There was a factor, and it was the tires. it put on a great show. It really did.
Yeah, it definitely was. It was awesome to have, I think, all three series going this weekend again, and especially awesome that it was a doubleheader, you know, on Saturday.
Heck yeah.
I think that's
and they blended together in my mind because they're on the same day. So that was a good race, man. A lot of good racing trucks and Xfinity back to back.
Yeah, I think, I mean, and I guess you guys can decide if you want to disagree with me, but the Xfinity and the truck races to me were better watching than the Cup cars. Shorter races, a little more excitement, especially when you throw in the Josh Berry trebuchet across the infield and grass there.
Oh my! Yep, you know what? Yep, I watched that.
Sending the splitter in there. That's amazing.
And he made it like 6 feet in, and then it just Mother Earth just consumed that vehicle, and it shot it. That front end had to be what, 5 feet in the air?
Easily.
Oh yeah,
easily. That, absolutely. That was the finest patch of grass we have seen so far this season, and he destroyed it.
You know what? I'll give you that. Atlanta's got some nice looking sod down there, man. That place is looking pristine. And then you know, Josh Berry decided to take his 3,200-pound missile off the racetrack. Well,
unfortunately, and, Atlanta spent all their money on the grass and not the asphalt. So, both of them played a factor. So
that could be debated forever. I mean, you got some drivers that don't want them to repave Atlanta because they're afraid that if you make it a nice pristine smooth surface that you don't get the tire fall off that makes it too easy, I guess, in a way. And you also might lose some of the high line low line differences you get with the older surface. So they could pave it and make it great. They could pave it and ruin it.
And the last thing NASCAR needs is a fuel economy track, right? When you have some great racing here. So I'm with you there, Brent.
So there's a lot to talk about for sure on Atlanta, and we'll get into that a little bit. But we certainly aren't going to end this episode without talking about Bristol dirt track racing.
Dirt track stock car racing. I didn't think I was going to be excited.
Right. Yeah. Same here.
I told you both. This is going to be a blank show to bleep myself out. I really thought it was going to be.
You can say it.
You think? Are we got the? Yeah.
Yeah. Got the E on there. Got the E on there.
Okay. So children, cover your ears. Even though you have the internet now and you know all this, it's going to be a shit show. I thought it was going to be a shit show. It still may be a shit show. But what it's kind of evolving, and maybe Fox is doing a great job of hyping it. I'm pumped. I wasn't, and I am now.
There's so many storylines as far as like historically who's been good on dirt, you know, between Larson and all the guys that have won at Eldora in the trucks in the past. There's certainly some names on that win list that are participating on Sunday. And guys you might not think about, you know, just because that history's not there, or at least you don't know about the history, that are just flat-out wheelmen, you know? And I would expect that those skills are going to become very necessary, and we're going to find out quickly who's got them and who doesn't.
And the crazy part is they're going to let them practice. And I think we're going to see pretty quickly in practice who's got this figured out. And who doesn't? Like they used to say about the NASCAR road courses. They either know how to do it or they don't know how to do it. And it's going to be the same here. So yeah, let's jump into the race summary. Actually, before we go into the cup race summary, let's talk a little Xfinity. Talk a little Xfinity racing. Let's talk about my boy Martin Truex Jr. almost driving to victory lane in a car he hasn't been in 20 years. Let's talk about that, boys. What are your thoughts?
I kind of thought he was just trying to get. I thought it was kind of odd to me for him to jump back into an Xfinity car, because he, and correct me if I'm wrong, since you have a shrine for Mr. Truex in your house, Matt. Is this running an Xfinity car something he does on a regular basis, or what was the reasoning behind this decision to run Xfinity Atlanta this week?
I think they needed someone to get that Stanley yellow 20, whatever number he was, car up to the lead, get some sponsor dollars, and probably to sell diecasts, honestly, because I have a pre-order in. So,
okay.
Wait. You have a pre-order for this non-winning Stanley yellow car driven by Martin Truex in the Echo 250 at Atlanta?
I'm sorry. The dominance that was displayed.
Please, no,
I
don't. I
thought about it. They did send me the email, and I'm like, that is going to be a rare one.
You know, marketing team is well planned over there.
The only reason why it's going to be rare is because there ain't no one going to buy it.
Listen, buddy. All right. Right now, I'm looking at a 2015 Chevrolet SS with a 78 Furniture Row car that Martin took to Pocono. And guess how many of those they made? Only 700, buddy. And guess who's got one sitting on his desk right now?
You do.
Yeah. Now, what did I pay for it? I don't want to talk about it. All right. Because I didn't buy it when he won. Lord. Okay. But.
You gotta hang on to that, Matt, for another 5 years.
I got a problem, guys. I really do. And you know what's not helping is quarantine. I'm telling you right now.
Yeah. Well,
not helping the addiction.
Yep.
But yeah, other than that, that was a great race. And Brent, to your point earlier, I think the shorter races, the trucks and the Xfinity cars put on a great show. They really did.
Absolutely. That is like, again, take note, right? NASCAR, take note of what the people are saying, and they like that doubleheader, shorter race action, especially at a track like this where, you know, it's the dynamic is a little different, I think, from most places on the way the race could play out. And the shorter race is kind of makes guys do things more often and earlier, which I think helps with the excitement factor for sure, you know.
Yes,
for sure. So, and you can, as a fan, right? You can prepare yourself for, okay, like in that case, there's a truck race at 2 o'clock or 2:30, and there's a Xfinity race at what was it, 5:30 or 5 o'clock?
Yep.
So like you could set yourself up. You know what I mean? Like, all right, afternoon of racing, and it's over at the same time as a normal cup race, and I just watched two of them.
Right.
And
come on.
Yeah, and different drivers, right? Different handling vehicles for the most part. And yeah, it was awesome. Definitely liked the doubleheader.
Yeah.
But again, KB in the trucks, right? KB was in the trucks on the...
No. You know what? That's why I blacked that race out, Adam.
That's honestly probably why.
I finally remember why I blocked that out and didn't talk about it when I said there's only two series racing.
So the truck race I thought the pre-show was pretty good because Mr. Brett Moffitt, that team figured out that they had an engine that wasn't going to work about an hour before the race, and they desperately got it changed.
That's
just before
nuts.
I had to go to the back of the pack, of course, but then he freaking drove it right up to the top 10.
Yeah, finished in ninth.
Yeah,
exactly. Takes our dealerships 3 weeks to change an engine, right?
Yeah,
boys, 35 minutes.
And
them boys earned a beer. Them boys earned a beer Saturday night, that's for sure.
You know what? And if this was us doing this, right? If we had to change an engine in 35 minutes, it would get in, the engine would get in the car, and we'd be like, where are these nuts and bolts going?
There's that truck did not off. Finish the race.
Guys, there's a lot of bolts and nuts lying around. Yeah,
we wouldn't be able to afford the NASCAR fines on post-race inspection, that's for sure.
gentlemen to the hauler. What? The president, this has never happened before. The pit crew? Yeah. Not good.
Well, not good. So we've seen when we went to Talladega a couple years ago, right after practice on Saturday, the number 11 Denny Hamlin team was changing an engine in the garage. And with that whole fan experience thing you got there, for minimal dollars, you can stand and watch.
That was unbelievable. And buy a beer
at the same time.
We were both, and all of us, being techie like we are, we're sitting there with our jaws on the floor watching them just, no one's talking, right? The crew changing the engine. No one said a word to each other. No one's yelling. No one's busting knuckles. No one's saying anything. They just, going about their job, slinging engines.
They just knew what they had to do. Yeah.
No one's screaming. They can't find their 10mm socket. Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And it was the whole Gibbs team in that sense. It was people from Truex and, from the Truex team. It was, I don't know if I saw anybody from Kyle's team.
No, dude, absolutely not. They were in, come on, no. No, they weren't.
But yeah, I mean, they probably had that engine changed in 30 to 45 minutes, and they weren't even under a specific time crunch to do it in that length of time.
They were able to take their time a little more in comparison to Moffitt and his team.
That was a cool sight.
So I think the biggest story that came out of the truck before we move on to Cup, the trucks in Xfinity, had to be good old Noah Gragson for sure.
Gragson and Heinrich.
There was a couple things that occurred.
So what happened? Give us the story. Give us this backstory
series of events. Eh?
How it got to be that there was a, I'll just say, scuffle between the two of them post race.
So the nine car. So the story goes, the nine car was pitting in front of Daniel Hemric's car. What number is his car? I can't remember off the top of my head.
Eight.
Whatever it is.
I don't know. So the nine car is Gragson, though, right?
Nine car is Gragson. So they're coming to pit road. They're all running up front. They're running pretty good. And there's a truck behind Daniel Hemric's pit that was deep in his box, meaning he was almost in Daniel Hemric's block. So Daniel Hemric had to go in deeper than he normally would to pit his car. And for whatever reason, Noah thought he was doing it on purpose, didn't realize the 99 was as deep in his box as, he was. Noah flips off Hendrick, right? Flips him off, pulling into his own box, and in the process of steering with one hand, doesn't get completely into his own pit box. So Fox shows an angle of him backing straight up directly into Hemric's car. Boom, hits it, right? And then pulls forward and pits. If you watch, you both watched it, and the pit crew was thoroughly confused about what was going on, right? Both of them were just kind of standing around at one point, like, "What are we going to fight now, or what's going to happen?" Right?
Yeah, I mean, Hemric's front tire changer saw his life flash before his eyes, for crying out loud.
I'm sure. It's all muscle memory, right? And they're not ready. They're not, you might see it out of your peripherals, but your job is to get that tire on and off. So, that happens. Yeah, Adam,
I look at it like all those series of events. So there's an initial screw up by whatever car was pitting in front of Hemric that caused Hemric to not execute his pit, entrance correctly, or probably the way he wanted to do it. Right, he messed up in a sense in reaction to that car. So then Gragson has to then react, right? When he comes in, doesn't get it right. And when he stopped, right, he's not within the box. So if he pits in that sense and executes a pit stop, he gets a penalty.
Correct. You need to have your right side tires inside the box.
Right. So us taking everybody's reaction out of it, of what, why they think they did this or why they think they did that. He backs up. He hits the car. He positions himself then into the pit box, I'm assuming because he didn't want a penalty, right? He didn't want to take the penalty in that instance. But now, only Noah Gragson knows whether he did it intentionally or not, just like only Kyle Busch knows whether or not he spun the truck.
Correct.
Yeah, and NASCAR said they can't, you know, and like you said, Adam, it they can't confirm or deny whether backing into Hemric was intentional. But
they got the data, right? They got the data of enough people backing into each other on pit road.
They have enough people backing into each other on pit road.
We've heard that before. Jesus.
I love it. And you know what? And like, if Gragson, if the tires were smoking on Gragson's car in reverse, right, then we'd be singing a different story, right? We'd all be chirping a different story. But it did look controlled, right? The reversing looked controlled. For the most part,
his foot slipped off the clutch. You know, he just
Yeah, he didn't. You know, it didn't exactly look like Days of Thunder wreckage. You know what I mean?
Correct.
I mean, it's Days of Thunder's TV, right? So they're going to dramatize everything. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't Days of Thunder worthy. I don't think.
No. And then the angle, the first angle Fox had of it, you really couldn't tell that Gragson's car was outside of his box for the most part, right?
Yeah.
Everybody was like, "Oh, what is going on?" You know, everybody's up in arms about
it. It's Noah Gragson because he's got a history, right? So it's very easy to go down that train of he's overreacting because he has overreacted.
Yes. Here we go again, right? So, so they finally get the tires changed on those cars, right? They eventually make it out of the pit box, and I don't know where either of them finished.
We got Greg's finished fourth, and Hemric finished in ninth. So then we get into post-race interviews, and here's where it gets exciting, right?
Yeah, so Truex is talking to Jamie Little, right? And, you know, he's being a great guy because he is, right? You know, giving props, right, to Cendric. Cendric won the race, right? Yeah, Cendric won the race. And
No.
Austin Cendric? Allgaier. No?
Allgaier.
Okay. Jason Allgaier did, all right.
All right, so we're backing up. So Jamie Little's talking to Truex, and you know, Truex is giving all of his great compliments that he does because he's such a great person to Allgaier, who won the race, right? Wins the race. And there's a scene right before the camera's like trying to cut. You can see it spinning, and you can hear Truex go, "Oh, they fighting." Right? And then here we go, right? It's on. So who's got the play-by-play? Who wants to go through the play-by-play?
So the angle that I saw when I was watching it, Matt, if Jamie was interviewing Truex when it happened, somebody else was interviewing Gragson. Yep. And Hemric just comes storming on up and shoves him right in the middle of a TV interview, and then he pulls out the haymaker.
He misses a monster hook.
Yeah, disappointing that he missed. With both of those swings, Gragson did. Yeah, that was how they tried to settle it. And afterwards, so it couldn't be more than 10 minutes later, Jamie interviews both of them. You know, and Hemric's comment was, "My Toyota Supra has a hole in the nose, and Noah got popped in the eye, so we're even." And that was probably before Gragson's interview, because that was where Gragson said, you know, "I'd be upset too if my career was headed in the same direction as his was." So
low blow. Definitely low blow.
Absolutely.
You both finished top 10, right?
Right.
Like, guys, really? And then, you know, Gragson, if it was any other driver, right, you would think, you know, I honestly thought it was Gragson's fault the whole time. I thought this man is doing this to himself, right? He's getting punched in the face on pit road, right? He's flipping off drivers going in and out of the box, right? But I don't know, man. Maybe he should take up a boxing career, because he threw a monster hook. Yeah, and if he would have connected, Hemric would have been, that would have been lights out. He'd have been lying there on pit road.
That was my first reaction. You know, I thought, seeing what happened in the pit sequence instance that obviously led up to the Hemric coming over. So I think in the moment of Hemric approaching Gragson, Gragson was getting interviewed, I believe.
PRN, right? Or someone else was
somebody was there to talk to him, and Hemric, you know, comes up behind him, and you can see it in the video of that interview that, you know, he gets startled. He doesn't realize he's there until he is. And yeah, that was my first reaction of him, like, regardless of the situation, if Hemric would have landed that first punch, good night. or I'm sorry, if Gregson would have landed that first one, good night. Like that, he was. That was gonna be a, that was gonna be a blow.
Yeah, give that an 8 on a scale of 1 to hockey player fight. Solid.
Now,
solid.
If you would have pulled his race suit over his head and started just feeding him, you know.
Yeah, we've learned that from the Mighty Ducks. We've learned that that's what you do.
Putting the foil on, coach. Putting the foil on.
It was was great. I thought for what had happened, each guy stood up for themselves, right?
Yeah.
For their moment, and it made for excellent TV. And I applaud NASCAR at this point for not really policing the situation. To be honest,
no fines were issued.
What I guess I do have a problem with is, let's just say Hemric or Gregson lands that punch, right? And Hemric drops to the ground, and the worst case scenario happens, and he's out cold.
Yep.
You know, in the real world, outside of a NASCAR pit lane or post race interview, that's assault, brother.
To quote Big Daddy, yeah.
You know, it's questionable that you're watching these people who clearly like influence your life in a sense. Not like that they're heroes or anything like that, but like you're watching this occur, right? And you're like, and you see some guy knock out another guy just because he backed into his car, like flat out. Like, there's people in this world that are like, okay, that's okay for me to do. I'm just gonna knock some guy's freaking block off if he runs
through my car.
So like,
heaven.
I don't necessarily disagree. I certainly applaud NASCAR for not like getting involved in that, because like, yeah, it's entertainment, man. That's why it's like in hockey, right? You know, all the head stuff and concussions, but like, there's an aspect of like, this is just the way it goes.
And so like, heaven forbid if there's any kids listen to this, you know, Lord. don't, you know, maybe don't use these guys as your role models for, you know, for your life.
No, just use them as your entertainment source, because that's what
it's
for.
That's right. But the one part, Adam, I'm with you. Brent, I'm with you. The one part I didn't like was that third crewman, Bremer, who jumped in. Right. And immediately, right. So it was one of Gregson's guys immediately put Hemric in a headlock. Right. You don't hockey rules, boys. Hockey rules. Right.
Yeah. Let him fight it out, man. Clear the gloves and sticks out of the way. Let him
get in. Don't be the third man in. Exactly. Just let it play out. Now, if someone's on the ground getting, you know, their stuff rocked, yeah. You jump in. We're not trying to see anybody get murdered today, but. God, like, don't be the third. I don't like that. I don't like. Yeah, you try, if you're breaking them up, don't put someone else in a headlock, especially if it's your own driver, right?
Yeah.
Great. Don't grab the other guy and hold him. And
no hit one him, man. Hit
another
him.
Punch. No, I missed it again. He could have connected on that one when the guy was holding him. So
yeah, he definitely, like, you know, in hockey, right? Like when it's a multiplayer fight, like. It's a gentleman's rule that, like, if you're the goalie, right, and you're trying to get in, you go find the other goalie.
You beat up the other goalie.
That's correct. What I mean. Like, if you're the centerman, you go find the other centerman. You know, like, you just find your guy that you match up with, and that's who you play. Up. It doesn't matter. No. It doesn't matter. You just find the guy.
No.
So, you like, in that case, Gregson pit crew versus Hemric pit crew. You know what I mean? Crew chief on crew chief. Left front tire changer on left front tire changer. I don't care what it is.
Dude. The fight I want to see, though, the Jack men go at it. Those dudes are huge. You know?
They're with the gas can guys.
They're tall, too. Yeah, they got that. Yeah, man. But we'll do the over-unders on the pit crew fights.
In a future episode of...
Man, this is entertainment. This is like...
Yeah,
this
Adam, you said it. Episode one, buddy. Right? Episode one, you said it. Is NASCAR going to be a legitimate racing series? Or are they in its entertainment business? Right? And this is the line of dance, right here, played out in front of us.
Yep, I'm all for it. I really am. There has to be drama because that's what other sports have. That's what captivates other people to other sports is the drama that ensues. And there's no shortage of drama in NASCAR. That's for sure. You just have to know where to find it.
So from NASCAR's YouTube channel, right? I'm literally looking. I typed in Noah Gregson, and the first thing that comes up is NASCAR's YouTube channel extended highlights of the fight and Barry's car going up in the air about 8 feet in the air. That's and this tells you everything you want to know, right?
Yeah. They're promoting it and marketing it and making money off of it.
Yes, it's game promoted. So, and we're talking about it, right? So yeah. It's obviously working.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's obviously working.
So we move over to Sunday's race.
We do.
Yep.
And that's pretty much one story to talk about, and that's the Kyle Larson story. That didn't end up being a Cinderella story, I suppose.
No, Larson dominated. Larson, man, he had his stuff going, and how many laps did he lead? Like 200 plus?
269 laps.
That's insane. Oh my gosh. That's insane. That's absolutely insane. Yeah, it what sure a race. Is. It played, the whole tire thing was certainly a factor, and I think we were trying to like calculate like if there's 13 sets over 325 laps, we were looking at like anywhere from 20 to 30 laps, and that seemed to play out
until the
more
end.
Than one occasion.
Yeah, it sure did. It sure did. It was something to watch, and they used, I think they used every one of those 13 sets.
So Ryan Blaney takes the win ultimately. If you look at the points, you know. Yeah, Kyle Larson didn't take home the win, but I do believe he did win stage one and stage two in that race. So if you look at the ultimate points at the end of the day, Blaney takes home 57, Larson takes home 55,
okay. Bowman
third takes home 47. So he didn't, you know, you don't get the nice pretty W in that column, but he's not totally going home empty handed from a championship point standpoint.
Absolutely. So, he's maintained himself, right? So what is he I have to look at my notes, but
he's in second in points. So Hamlin's still in the lead, 277, and Larson has 234. So there's still a decent gap there. Yeah. Although Bristol might change that in case anybody watched the iRacing thing on Bristol. Denny and Logano were using the wall, you know, to turn the car
we'll get into that, right? We'll certainly get into Bristol and all the stuff that's going there. But on the Hamlin train, right? So Blaney wins, and I'm pumped up about Blaney winning, to be honest with you, because I feel like Blaney. Like, I feel like Blaney is a relatable guy, and, like, I could go to a bar and have a beer with Ryan Blaney.
Yeah. Ryan Blaney's down to earth, man. I like his attitude.
Like, he's not as, the flag he's not as to corporate as buddy Chase Elliott, but, like, he's still, like, you know what I mean? Like, Chase has won a championship, so he's corporate in my mind.
He's corporate. He's been converted. But, yeah, Brent, given the checkered flag to that fan, right, that's – yeah, the CEO of Ford Motor Company tweeted out about that, Jim Farley.
Did he?
Yep.
Nice.
Thank you for supporting our fan base, right? So.
Yeah. That's what I mean. I think Brian's an all-around nice guy, and he's got the pedigree of the family, you know, from a racing perspective, and sure he's got a good team. He's in a good car. You know, he's got the ability to win as a top in the top echelon team as much as anybody else. And he's certainly talented. And to see him get a win at a track like Atlanta, where it's a full-blown team effort, and saving your equipment, I think it speaks to his capabilities. You know,
100%. And I just have a note. I had a fun fact that I shared with the gentlemen, my teammates here previously. So I need to get this off my chest. It's been bothering me. So Quinn Huff in the 00 car, guys, he was a lap down at the competition caution.
So for people who don't know, when was the competition caution from the beginning of the race to the competition caution? How many laps had passed?
It was 27 laps. And the man was a lap down. That's. Yeah, I don't think I've seen that yet, honestly. Without having mechanical failure.
Sure.
I don't think I've seen it. That is next level. It hit me so hard that I actually wrote in my note. It was a whole line in my notebook that I needed to talk about on this podcast. Because what is going on? How? What? If your setup's that screwed up, I get it, right? But yeah, hold her on the lead lap. You know, we're bunched up still, right? The draft will pull you around if you're doing stuff right.
So where did he start?
Gosh, let's see.
And, like, did he have to go to the back of the pack for...
All right, so Quinn Huff started in 35th position.
Oh, and he did better.
He finished in 33rd. So
if he was one lap down to 27 laps, and I averaged that out over 325... what was he, like 8 or 9 laps out?
How many, what did he finish? He finished, what is that? So he only completed 314 laps.
All right, so he didn't even make it.
Didn't even bring it home. So, anyway, sorry to sidetrack it, but my God.
Shout out to Quinn Huff, though, but just keep doing your thing. Just keep doing your thing.
I'd love the interview, man.
Dedicated.
Love an interview.
Dedicated.
And he's doing what we all want to do. He wants him to be a race car driver, right? Yes. So, got something going on. But yeah, Kevin Harvick.
Yeah.
The big winner, the Atlanta guy. He's got line around the track named after him.
So should we get into review of the picks, right? Because Harvick was my winner.
You took him.
I took Harvick as a winner, and. Oh, man, like, you really wasn't in the beginning. It was like Kevin Harvick of the last, you know, 5 races of this year. And then, you know, the last whatever quarter of the season last year where he's just something's wrong. Something isn't right, whether it's him, the car, the team. I don't know.
Yeah, but, something went. So after that competition caution, when Quinn Huff was a lap down, the 4 car came in and got tires and they actually knocked the valve stem off, putting it back on.
Yeah. Okay. So in this case,
he had to come back to pit road. And Adam, what was his comments? He made some comments that sounds like Kyle Busch, honestly.
He did. Yeah. He said, he's like, this is the biggest piece of shit I've ever driven at Atlanta.
Yikes.
And this is the man who, for the lack of better words, in 2001 took over in that RCR team, not in the 3 car, but in a different car. For Dale Earnhardt Sr., right, after he passed in 2001 in the 500. And he won that race, which was an unbelievable story. So, you know,
he wasn't even ready yet. Everybody's saying he wasn't ready for that cup ride at that point.
Right. So whether it was Dale Sr. himself getting that boy across the finish line in first place, I don't freaking know. But he executed it, right? So he's got some experience here, and he's obviously won here. As far as active drivers goes, you know, just as much as Kurt Busch with 3 wins. So, you know, his expectations are probably high as how good his car should be. But you know, man.
That was some showing for them. That was, it was tough to, they didn't talk, when the broadcast doesn't even mention the driver, minus for all the bad stuff going on, that's a problem, right? And Harvick literally, there's a racing line around that track. They call it the Harvick line.
Mm-hmm.
The low line, hanging the tire, hanging your left sides in the paint. Right. Yep. That's a Harvick. That's, they call it the Harvick line. And pit road didn't help him, but he still pulled a what? He still pulled a 10th place.
He battled back. And that's I think is the ultimate story there, right? Yep. Is despite all that, he battles back, and what did he finish? Did you say 10th?
He finished in 10th place. Yep.
So he finished better, on the lead lap.
Way better than my picks.
So Brent, Adam, before we jump to Brent, Adam, so you had Harvick and you had your dark horse.
I heard dark horse Kurt Busch, which, you know, I'll join on the shit on Denny Hamlin train here, and freaking Hamlin turned him into the wall, bud.
Oh, did he? I believe
that was the sequence of events. They got a little jammed up on the high line because the high line was slow on restart, and I think Hamlin just
drove through him.
He drove through him, yeah.
He didn't let.
Whether it was intentional or not, it really doesn't matter. But the action of driving through him occurred. Put Kurt in the wall. Frick.
That being said, Kurt Busch ended up in the care center. The only driver, might I add, to end up in the care center.
Yeah. Because the only other DNF was Chase Elliott, and he had a motor to let smoke out.
And see, Brent, that's funny you bring that up. So I saw that happen, right? And I went, uh-oh. And the reason I went, uh-oh, at that time was Larson was running around out front.
Uh-huh.
And with all these high performance engine manufacturers. They don't build one of anything, including problems, right? So I'm like, oh, here we go, right? If one drops, then normally the rest of them will trickle out, but, you know, it must have just been a one-off on Chase because he was the only one, only Hendrick car that went down, so...
But maybe Larson's issue towards the end there too was engine power. Who knows? I mean, the team's not going to tell you, but some of the things that have been coming out and being said about the Hendrick team this year, they seem to have found their speed, and engines seem to be one of the reasons why, at least what people are alluding to. And maybe they just got them wound up a little too tight, boys.
Great point. And, you know, for Larson to come out and said the car's down in power, right? Instead of just, take everybody's excuse and go, wore the tires off it, right?
Yeah.
Maybe, they won't tip their hand or NASCAR won't be looking whatever they're doing to find their speed, right? So
there's at the end of the day, it ain't a bad day for Larson, like Brent said, for, 55 points.
He takes home.
It ain't no chump change.
Yep. No, he's deep. He's going to be deep. If he keeps this up, he'll be deep in the playoff run for sure. So he's got two playoff points, right? So
yep. My care center pick was Brent and I. Brent, you and I had the same dark horse and same care center.
I think so.
You both did.
And Mr. Chastain, huh?
We were wrong. We were wrong.
Yeah, he did well. He really finished 14th.
14th, last car in the lead lap.
Hell yeah. Good for the Melon Man. Good for the Melon. We freaking doubted him. Mm-hmm. We didn't give him a fair shot.
He needed that motivation.
But he had seat time in the trucks on Saturday.
Yes, he did.
He didn't do half bad.
Nope. I miss his truck, though. Remember his truck he had? The Florida Watermelon Growers Association, whatever it was? And the pickup, the bed of the truck was watermelons.
Did you want to talk about diecast?
I know.
I need diecast. I need that.
That one's out there. I've been looking.
Find
he just can't win anymore. The price keeps going up. So he just needs to stay where he is.
Yeah.
But yeah, both of you had
a short list of diecast cars, and that's on it.
Is it? Okay. It's same for me. I like that one. That's a good looking rig because, who doesn't want a truck that's covered in watermelons? Like, that's never be done again unless it's Ross Chastain. He's the only one that could pull that off. So
yeah, or like mini Ross Chastains, like next generation.
Gen 2 and Gen 3.
Yeah, that would be what, Gen 8 of the Melon Farm?
Gen 9. Yes, Gen 9. The ninth generation. But yeah, so Brent, you had the same Dark Horse and Care Center as Adam, huh?
I did. And for the winner, I had Brad Keselowski, and that did not pan out because he ended up 28th.
You had the team, though.
Yeah.
It's not the driver.
Have the team. Yep.
Wow.
What happened to Keselowski? Because he was, he was just slow, man.
I just I don't think there was a story that I heard.
Not that I really know of. I mean,
multiple laps down, started up front in the fourth position and slowly sank through the day. So
just didn't have it. Yeah.
Nope.
Hmm.
Didn't get the good juju from Roger, I guess. I guess that was all for Blaney.
So, he didn't give him the pep talk or whatever they do. Who knows?
The pep talk. Lean in closer to the phone. I'm old. Lean in closer. You there? Who am I talking to? Which one are you?
Anyway.
All right, gentlemen. So I took Denny Hamlin to win. And it looks like Mr. Hamlin ended up in fourth position. So I will claim myself
in fourth.
Sure did, bud. Sure did.
Freaking drives through Kurt Busch and drives it to fourth. My lord.
You're welcome. And my dark horse was Ryan Newman, who actually ended up in 13th. So we did good. We did good there. The only one I didn't get was the care center because my driver, Michael McDowell, finished in 19th position. So I thought he was going to have an off week. But yeah. You all mixed up your dark horse with your care center. You ought to have been winning that pretty much. So.
Yeah, we had her mixed up there for sure. We thought Chastain was going to be flustered after his run in, with KV in Phoenix. But
I don't think anybody slept bad that night besides Kyle Busch.
Oh, yeah. It's clear that Chastain don't give a damn.
man didn't lose any sleep for that argument. Tell you that.
Oh, my gosh.
Nope.
That was awesome. But yeah, it's going for the window was awesome. So we're watching Larson lose tire, right?
Yeah.
And Blaney is gaining. And out front, the last car in the lead lap at that time was the number two of Joey Logano.
22.
Who was teammates with the 12 car of Ryan Blaney, right? And we're watching this play out. The internet's blowing up that Joey's blocking, right? Joey's blocking him. Now, I looked at it. I actually wrote down that Joey was blocking, right? In the moment. I'm like, Logano's blocking, and I love it, right? I will root for the Fords if my boy's not in contention, right? So I'm like, this is great. Watching this play out. So I went back and watched it. Joey wasn't blocking, but Adam, you made a good point earlier that even if he was, he's got every right to be on the lead lap, right? The same lead lap. And they're teammates, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't like, go ahead. Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. I feel like, as one of only three registered Joey Logano fans in the United States of America, I feel like I got something to say here.
Please chime in. Speak for Joey.
Yeah. Like, definitely. I feel like, for sure, Joey has every right to stay on the lead lap. And this is the teammate scenario playing out in favor. Nobody in particular placed Joey Logano in that spot, right? So reverse all the roles in a similar scenario. Larson is the one passing Blaney late in the race to win, and Alex Bowman is the one, in Joey's spot. What happens differently? Nothing.
Nope. Same thing.
Bowman would do the exact same thing, and I don't think there was anything that Logano was doing to say, I'm blocking. Was he strategically driving a particular line? Yeah, absolutely. Because in that situation, it's a teammate thing, trying to get your boy for a win there.
Taking the arrow.
Because ownership and manufacturer points are a thing. That's a real thing in the whole grand scheme of things here. Yeah, he's helping out his guy. And I don't see anything wrong with it, because again, I don't think anybody in another situation does anything different,
except
Larson's called Gibbs cars. Gibbs cars. Yeah, maybe that's
it. There is no teammates. None of them like each other. Not a single one. Denny Hamlin will race Martin Truex like he's his worst enemy, right? And Kyle Busch isn't a teammate with anybody, but ever, and never will be. But yeah, I think if it's just if the script is flipped, I think the Hendrix cars do exactly what the Penske cars did.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, that's the kind of the culture that's being created here with the teams and, having, certainly obviously these top teams like Penske, Hendrick and Gibbs, and even Stuart Haas in a sense, they can do this stuff because they have the ability to. That's what the money allows you to do. So
that's right. Brink, did you see it any differently?
No. Yeah. I like you said, once Blaney got out in front of Larson couldn't even get around Logano. The car was falling off too bad. So yep. I think I commented, in our pre-podcast chats that even if Logano wasn't there, the race still finishes the way that it finished.
Yeah.
Yep. So I agree.
Yep.
Open and shut case.
For sure.
The jury has decided on their verdict. So yeah. Yeah, it was a good race though. It was long. Definitely not as action packed as the Xfinity and the truck race, but I'll take it. It had a good finish, because that would have finished under green with Larson with an 18-second lead. It would have been a snooze fest in my book. So
yeah.
They need to dial that back to like a 350-mile race next year, and I think it'll be the butter zone.
That's it. I think
you can definitely dial it back on laps for sure, because, it was like, what, 4 hours?
It was 3 hours, 27 minutes, and 41 seconds on the dot.
Yeah, and that's so. Just – it's too long. I mean, literally, I started watching the race, and, I've got other responsibilities in my life as far as children go. So, we literally, the kids woke up from the nap, and so it's like, it was beautiful outside now, right here in this neck of the woods. So we go outside, and do that thing and they come back in for dinner at whatever it was, 5:30, and like there's still 100 laps to go. I'm like, you gotta be kidding. I ain't missing all that.
Yeah, I fell asleep at some point because my notes kind of stopped. So
it's amazing.
Your handwriting starts to trail off the edge of the page.
Yeah, just a pen, stab myself with a pencil, you know, that whole thing. But
I applaud you for falling asleep during a NASCAR race. Now I challenge you to do it at an actual race.
Oh, so one of us has done that a few times, if my memory serves me correctly. So
take a little nap, bud. I mean, you know, if I was in Atlanta last weekend, you'd be damn sure I've been sleeping in the stands for a period of time.
Oh God, I treasure those pictures. I really, really do. my boy sleeping with his headphones on.
And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, everybody talks about like, oh, it's kind of a snooze fest. And yeah, I agree. Like in this case, 100%. I 100% agree because I know I would have done it myself. But that's okay. You know, everybody needs a little nap sometimes. And
listen, we're given the opportunity to watch or sleep, right? Yeah. And if you wake up for the good parts, you're good to go. Right. Really. And in this case, you know. took a little bit of a nap, but we're good. I wake up and go, it was a caution. Is there a caution? What's going on? And you know, sometimes there is, sometimes there's not. Sometimes they're running an ad with a yellow thing up top that makes me think there's a caution, you know, but it's all good, guys. But that was
awesome. Race, definitely, despite the snooze fest opportunity. Yeah, all weekend, I think all around good stuff. But as far as what NASCAR can do better, baby, and being critical is definitely just the total length of the Cup race on Sunday.
I mean, yeah, and from what I've seen online, we're not the only ones talking about it. So no. hopefully they're listening, and NASCAR does connect with their fans, right? And to the point of, do we even want to get into the Timmy Hill iRacing?
Well, let's. We definitely talked about quickly. Everything. Okay. Yeah. So. So next we can definitely get into everything Bristol dirt racing, and I think, you know, there's a lot to talk about that's been happening at Bristol leading up to this weekend. It's been very controversial since it's been announced earlier in the year as far as taking away a traditional short track race that everybody wants. One of the better ones for sure. I mean, the spring race is not the Bristol fall race, as in it's in the spring, it's during the day, in the fall, it's at night, and you know, prime time at Bristol. I mean, we're talking about going because it's a race to go see. It's an event, you know, so it's a little different in that sense, but the people have said they want short track racing, and Bristol is certainly, if it's not the best short track, if it's not the best short track race, or races on the schedule, it's definitely second, for sure.
Oh God, it's top in my list, man. That place, the banking alone, and having the stands all the way around, is just unbelievably cool.
Great Coliseum.
I just can't wait for the noise that place is going to make. We're there.
Yeah, we'll see how it compares for Brent, right? Of his Dover experience as a young buck and heading on over to Bristol, where you know. We'll get the vortex going in the bad weather.
Get the vortex. Get them clouds away.
Say, you're talking about the vortex. I mean, they're going to be, you know, they're going to be throwing clouds of dust. If we go into the fall race, like we're hoping to, there will still be distinct signs of there having been large quantities of earth placed upon that racing surface. You talked about the banking at Bristol. I read they put about a foot. They needed to take some banking out of it for dirt. They put about a foot at the top of the track, and they put 8 to 9 feet at the bottom of the track.
To
take banking out of the corner. So it's
how
insane.
How long have they been working on this to prepare this? You know,
I don't know.
Like, what are you going to do with the dirt? Take it back apart. What are you going to do with the dirt? Put it back in the ground? Like, what do you do?
So that's another thing, right? So. There's the controversy again is, yeah, we're taking away a short track race, but now we're incorporating a Cup Series dirt race. So, right, Premier Series of NASCAR is going to race on dirt, which historically hasn't been done for a very long time. More recently, the only dirt racing that's gone on in either of the NASCAR series has been, you know, from, what is it, 2013 was the first one, to 2 years ago, they've been racing trucks at Eldora.
Great race to watch. Ohio, it really is. Right? Yep.
And that's provided... Yeah, that's provided some good. That's provided some good content. It's been, you know, it's again, it's high horsepower cars on a racing surface. They really, you know, they have no business on being at,
right?
Creating that entertainment that I so love in this sport.
Yeah. And so, I was really curious how they were going to set these trucks up, or these cars up. Excuse me, these cars up. So, there's only so much suspension you could put in it. They're not really going to play with the suspension travel, right? They're not going to, they're going to soften everything up, but
yeah,
I mean, it's going to be bizarre, really.
Story is tires again. Again, that is like 3 weeks in a row now. We've been talking about this, that the tires are a critical factor. But if you think about cars, just in your car in general, right? The only thing touching the ground is the four tires,
and not a large part of it either, you know? So.
So what's the tire story here? I mean, it's different. We're changing the rules up again.
We're going.
Brent, I'm going to lean on our technical expert here, Brent. You're going to have to run through these tires with me, buddy. What is different than our normal tire to these dirt tires?
So we are going to bias ply tires. I'm stepping back in time, which I suspect is probably the norm for anything running on dirt these days, where instead of having radial tires like we're used to seeing, where you have a steel cord or a steel belt running the circumference of the tread and then reinforcing cords or fibers running from bead to bead perpendicular to that across the tire, you now have these sort of woven at about a 45 degree angle series of reinforcing structure that runs from one bead of the tire to the other bead of the tire. And the reason we don't use those on passenger cars or road-going race cars much anymore is because those cords are woven together. They rub on each other as the tire rolls, and they run hotter. They create more heat.
I was going to say, they got to create more heat in that. So
So bias ply at 200 miles an hour is not a good idea.
So we're stepping back in time and technology, right, in a series that wants to advance itself. The technology. Going backwards here.
It makes sense on dirt. It makes sense on dirt.
And why? Does it make sense on dirt?
On a radial where you've got these typically steel belts or steel cords running the circumference of the tire to reinforce it so that it doesn't want to balloon when you spin it faster. The downside of that is it makes that tread not want to conform to the road surface as much. This is where bias ply and dirt makes sense. The contact patch between the tire and the dirt, in this case, is more likely to flex and conform to the surface. So on an irregular surface like dirt, it makes more sense. You get a bigger contact patch out of a bias ply tire on an irregular surface.
Interesting.
That's why.
It comes back to grip. And if you can find grip on almost any track, asphalt or dirt, right, chances are you're going to put yourself in a good position.
Now, talk about grip, and that's something, you know, and if you watch a NASCAR race, and even from Atlanta, you know, they talked about how, you know, Larson was hot and he was fast for three quarters of the race, and toward the end of it, not only was the tires falling off, but I suspect that his setup started becoming less than optimal. The sun started going down, the track started cooling off, and these teams and these drivers always talk about the track changing, the track taking rubber, the track temperature changing, and it affecting how the car handles. The car either doesn't want to turn, wants to get tight or understeer, or it wants to get loose and oversteer. The back end of the car wants to slide around, so they're chasing that setup. We're going to see track surface changes this weekend like these guys have never seen before. They are going to run 250 laps on a dirt surface with 3,200-pound race cars.
So how is this playing out then? Is it traditional, dirt track rules in a sense of like we're doing heats and then a main event?
We are doing heats, and this is where it gets really exciting. We talked about Quinn Huff earlier. NASCAR, we're running four four qualifying races, four 15-lap qualifiers to pick who goes into what we'll call the A main, if anyone's ever watched a dirt race.
Yeah.
And the leaders or the pole sitters for these four qualifiers are Corey LaJoie, Alex Bowman, Brad Keselowski, and Quinn Huff. He is on the pole.
He's on the pole in a heat.
In a heat. So we're gonna find out.
Is everybody who participates in the heat automatically going to be in the main?
No. The people that will get disqualified. And I thought they were just gonna take the top, you know, certain number of finishers, but they're gonna make this more complicated. They got a formula and they're gonna weigh finishing position and the number of positions that particular driver gained during that race. So if they started 10th and passed four people or passed five people, and they're gonna pick, and I'm not 100% sure how many, but they're gonna pick from these four qualifiers who goes into the big show.
Makes the show.
Why the hell are we overcomplicating this with these NASCAR algorithms? Everything.
Everything's complicated. So it is complicated. I get the heat races in the main because, you know, we can't stick that many cars on a dirt track. We're already going to struggle to keep this surface together for this race, but it's going to be interesting. So the track surface is going to dry out. It's going to start to take rubber, which is a bad thing for dirt because it causes a dramatic difference in traction between the racing line that has rubber on the surface and does not. So the fear being it could cause a very, you know, one line corners where we don't have a high line, we don't have a low line because the high line's not nowhere near fast enough. So
do you think the high line could be, you know, if everybody runs middle to low to start, as in just being the natural shortest way around the track. Later on, right, as in a traditional sense, like maybe the high line becomes pretty fast or people start running the high line because they could find grip there as in a traditional asphalt sense. But right. Now we're going to have loose dirt surface, but we're using tires now that are bias ply and better conformed and they have tread on them.
Yep.
Versus a slick. And also the tire's going to have, right, I think from the left side to the right side, there's going to be a natural stagger in size.
I think it's quite a bit too to try and get these cars to rotate or to want to rotate a little better in the corner. You know, Matt, you were talking about car setup. I mean, there's nothing they can do to turn these things into a late model. You watch the late
model. Cut them up.
Yeah, you want to talk about wedge, you know, wedge adjustments or getting that car to angle towards the left front tire. Those things are dramatic to make them work.
Say the least.
Too. So from watching the entertainment the other day with the iRacing at Bristol, and iRacing is very, very, very accurate. They do a really good job. They were the track was even taking rubber and changing on the dirt surface in the simulation, which was pretty impressive. But the thing that I saw with every car on that track, particularly Logano and Clint Bowyer, is they can get the car to rotate on corner entry, whether they were tapping the brakes or breathing off the throttle a little bit to get that car to want to rotate. They'd get halfway through the corner and they start feeding back on the power and the weight shifts to the back and the rear hooks and the front starts to push again. Mm. And then midway through the corner, they're sliding up the track and they can't get the front of the car to turn. So yeah.
What's going to be really, really interesting too is, Brent, you were talking about rubbering up, right? The dirt rubbering up. Yeah. And where's the rubber coming from off the tires, right? That's how it rubbers up. And what's really fascinating, I was reading about this because I don't know anything about dirt racing. So
yeah,
I was reading that, yes, the rubber line can be very, very fast, but you're going to destroy your tires. They're going to overheat. Mm-hmm. So what, and you guys were both on it saying, yeah, there's going to be a line and yeah, there's going to be loose dirt, which is faster. And what I think we're going to see is drivers running the fast line in the rubber until their tires start going away. Right. And they're going to have to breathe their tires by going up in the dirt to get them cooled down. And it's kind of like racing on rain tires to the fact that you want the water, right? You want that water to keep that tire cool. And I think something very similar is going to play out here. And it's going to lead to multiple line racing. And I think it's going to be awesome.
Yep.
That's a great opportunity to plug the Art of Racing in the Rain movie. You guys ever see that?
Oh, I sure have.
Freaking tearjerker, man. Got me good.
But you can't play those movies.
But yeah, that's why I brought up the whole Highline thing, because I was so William Byron won the iRacing event last night, and I was kind of watching him as they kind of talked a lot of, you know, played him up a little bit, because obviously he's a gamer boy and good at that and understanding that surface through a TV screen, and what to do. But he for the most part in the main event was running up against the wall.
Yep. Yes, he was high. Yep.
And he was very controlled compared to everybody else.
Yep.
Who was in the wall? Who was in the wall using the wall to make the corner? So those are your options.
Yeah, that would be my strategy, right? Is driver in deep, bouncer off the wall, and get back on the throttle and drive back down the hill.
You know? Get a corner the right way.
That's what Clint and Logano did. You know.
Yeah. You know, and if you happen to get on the inside of someone to push them into the wall and bounce off of them to get yourself straight, then so be it. You know,
it's even better.
Turn three on the last lap it is.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, so first or last.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, Adam, I really hope that track we get a wide enough racing lines that guys can run up at the wall and down at the bottom, because it'll provide way more opportunities for passing than if they've got a one line corner.
They're going to be slide jobbing each other. Like it's going out of style.
They will.
They're going to be in hot, low, ride it up the track, catch the wall, try to, and the guy's going to just cut them over again, coming off the corner. Right. So they're going to be trading. It's going to be a lot of trucks too. A lot of cars out there. My God.
It's going to be a lot on a short track. And, you know, if you listen to these guys enough about, you know, especially coming off Atlanta where there's multiple lines that could be run, It gives the driver options, you know. So if you're a wheel man, right, you could take a couple different ways around the track when trying to get around people, and you don't feel stuck in this groove. It creates the passing opportunities, which the fans love, right? Because in the passing situations, it can create chaos if it's not done at the right moment. And that's what makes short track racing in general, right, so exciting for the average fan. And it's grown on me. I think I said that earlier. It's definitely grown on me about being excited about this race. I find myself excited now because of what I'm realizing as I figure out what's about to happen. And they're certainly doing a good job of promoting it, for sure, like we talked about, within the NASCAR community, which obviously the three of us are in tune with at this point. So I, you know, for someone who's not in tune, I don't know how well you're seeing the information coming out, but it's cool, and I think it's still a shame that it's at Bristol, but I guess I understand why, to appease to more of the crowd. And I think I made this comment to you guys last night watching the iRacing thing. Is, you know, no offense to the guys at Fox, aside maybe from Clint Boyer, but wouldn't it be great if from an announcing standpoint, we just had some dirt track boys on their couch broadcasting the race for us in their terms?
Almost speaking a language we don't understand the whole time. Exactly. Unbelievable.
They should go to a little local dirt track and just grab a couple of the announcers, the guys that are usually talking over those loudspeakers that are so beat up you can't hear a word he's saying.
Yep.
Just bring them in there and let them call the race. That would make it more authentic.
Yeah, and Clint obviously brings the authenticity to that team in a situation like this.
The
moment his quote when he crashed out in the iRacing was, "Well, it's beer 30 in the Boyer house, boys."
Yep, that's amazing.
I love watching their broadcast because 90% of the time, no one has a rebuttal right away. Because they're just blown away about what just came out of that man's mouth, or they're trying to figure out what he said. So
yeah, right, and they're not sure what the right way to react to it is.
Is it okay to laugh at this? Am I okay with it?
poor Jeff Gordon out of his league. You know, oh,
so out of his league. So out of his league.
Cool. All right, let's get some picks.
Yeah, all mean, like, we'll have to see what happens with the race, but yeah, it's going to be good.
Who's first? I'm first?
I think Adam's first this week.
I got to write these down. This is my favorite part.
Okay. All right, so I'm going winner first.
Winner first.
Winner first. I am going with somebody that you might not like.
Oh, don't you do it.
I am going with Austin Dillon.
Ooh. Mm. Number three car. Not a bad pick, man. He did win a dirt race there at Bristol. He won one of his heat or the whole thing. I'm not sure.
I think he won his heat and then he won whatever feature he was in. I don't remember if it was late model or a particular another particular car. I don't really know. Again, I'm not really up and up on the different cars and stuff used, but I'm picking him because of his experience at Eldora, winning the inaugural race there in 2013. You know, I remember. I think Matt. I think you and I watched that race.
That wasn't. We didn't even know it was on.
Yeah, right?
We stumbled upon it and went, "What is happening?"
Yep,
and it was unbelievable. We didn't understand
it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool to watch for sure. And the fact that it was at a small track like that is just awesome in general. I would have preferred to see this race at Eldora or somewhere similar, right? Reading the backstory of his win and understanding it is he was very involved in the tire development so that was a truck race. He was very involved in the tire development testing with Goodyear for choosing the right tire for Eldora on the truck. So he's clearly got some experience from that perspective and probably had a little bit more in-depth knowledge about how things were going to go. And, you know, I'll take the experience. I'll take the experience in this case as a winner. There's certainly some other drivers you can choose from that kind of fit that same bill for sure. But I'm trying to think outside the box here a little bit in the sense of a guy who has, I think, overachieved already this year. He hasn't gotten a win, but he did. I think he finished well at Atlanta, car's been all right for him this year. You know, I think maybe perhaps he's turned a different leader. I know he got a win last year in Texas to put him in the chase, but I wouldn't be surprised to find him there at the end of the year again. So maybe this is the week he does it, where there's something that maybe more caters to what his past experience. You know what I mean? He has something to rely on here.
I like it. Yeah. I think that's a smart pick.
A good one.
So what's up next? It's going to be the dark horse, right?
Sure is.
Well, so with the dark horse, I'm going Tyler Reddick.
Oh, the number eight car.
Yep. I'm going Tyler Reddick. And it has to do with the high line. Running the high line.
Smart move.
And what that man did at Homestead a couple years ago, or just a couple weeks ago, I want to say in both the Xfinity race and the Cup race, he ran that high line and it was working. He was jamming.
He had that thing on a path, my friend. He was on rails. So good call. I like it.
So I'm you know, as a dark horse, not a typical guy, right, that you would expect to win, but perhaps in a situation like this, again, where there's chaos could definitely ensue.
How does he have dirt experience? Do you know?
I don't know. And yeah, I have no idea. My picks this week don't have much merit to them other than my just general thinking. You know, I don't have the historics on Tyler Reddick and dirt tracks, but you know, as NASCAR would say, I don't got the data. You know, I ain't got the data.
They don't get the data. We don't have it, guys. Sorry, we don't have it.
This is just me spitballing a little bit, but
I love it.
All right, Adam, what's your care center?
Favorite segment?
My care center pick. I don't know. I don't know if it's real controversial, so I don't know if it's good, but I think it's Corey LaJoie.
Okay. I had him in that position before.
You have. You've used him before. But
frequent flyer.
Yeah, there's a reason why, and I don't necessarily I don't really like Corey LaJoie. I think I think he's way out of his league here. You know, he does have a podcast too, and so there's probably an entertainment value to that, and it's produced by NASCAR themselves. So he's there's probably a reason why Corey LaJoie is the number one qualifier in a particular heat, and maybe it has something to do with his relationship with NASCAR at this point.
They're just hoping he doesn't fall back enough to give him the best starting position so he doesn't end up in last place.
Maybe. That could very well be the case. There could be something going on there that we're not seeing to the naked eye. But I don't think Corey LaJoie has any idea what he's doing. I really don't in this situation. So that's why I put him there. And, you know, I think about all the things that could factor into a guy ending up in the care center here, and it could end up being a lot of people. I mean, last week, what we said, we only had one in Kurt Busch.
Just one, Mr. Busch.
So the historical significance here is, I think there's been, like, the most cautions in a single race has been, like, 22 or something like that. And that was, like, 03 or 04, like, Coke 600. I think you could see upwards of 22 cautions this weekend in the Cup race. And, you know, I'll put Corey LaJoie as responsible for one of those and end up in the care center for sure.
Oh, well done, sir. I like it. I do. Outside Excellent. The box, man, for sure.
Excellent.
Got to spice it up, you know? Got to spice it up.
Sure. All right, Adam, you get to pick who goes next then.
I'm going to go you, Brent. I'm going to go you.
All right. I'm good with that. And I think I feel like my pick to win is probably going to be a unpopular opinion, and really won't surprise either of you guys. But I'm going with Kyle Larson.
I
feel like if Kyle Larson doesn't win, shame on him, because he may arguably have some of the most recent success in dirt races, with, you know, his situation last year, than anybody else in the field. So I think he's got that going for him. And he, again, if he doesn't capitalize on it, shame on him. My dark horse is actually Austin Dillon. So for
dark horse, Austin Dillon. Okay.
All the reasons that kind of that you picked up on, Adam. I think he's also a very, very popular contender.
He didn't make the rye race though. Both of you guys, though, you know that, right?
He didn't make the what?
He didn't make the main event in the iRacing.
That's okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I've got my opinions on. I mean, I agree. iRacing is very real, but there is definitely a different perception. As a driver on a video game versus a driver in an actual car.
I'm just tossing it out there.
I'm curious to see how it pans out. Because you know, I think I saw Denny. Hopefully, he's better in a real race car on dirt than he is on iRacing. Because his points lead could be in jeopardy.
Oh,
in case. Because I think he was a few laps down by the time he finished his heat.
I'm worried about the big name Cup guys. I really am in this.
Yeah,
this does not play to their favor. This whole situation does not, because they can get caught up in the junk, just like at, you know, a super speedway, as far as like Daytona and Talladega, right? You either want to be out front, or maybe you want to be really far in the back until it matters, because you don't want to get caught up in the big one.
Yeah. Negative. Yeah. Sorry to cut you off, buddy.
No, it's good. And with this track being so short, you know, I think the guys on the Fox broadcast talking about iRacing made a comment saying, you know, now, not only is this a short track, so when something happens in 3 seconds, you're on top of other cars. Now you can't stop because you're on dirt.
I didn't catch that. I love it.
It's going to be fun watching these guys try to avoid each other when the wrecks do happen. But carnage. Oh, it's going to be beautiful to watch. Just be prepared for lots and lots of pace laps. My care center pick, and well, I think we all kind of share the same sentiment here, where, you know, no one has a clue what's really going to happen this weekend. There is, you know, no one has the experience with this. My care center pick is going to be Daniel Suarez.
Suarez. A good run in Atlanta, but yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to look into it, and I don't believe that he has any kind of experience. So he'd be like me out there in a dirt car, just looping it around. So
I don't know the Daniel Suarez story either. I don't know that. Like, I mean, I know his ethnic background and all that, but I don't know where he cut his teeth.
I heard it's not dirt.
So. We're either going to find the guys that have dirt experience and can capitalize on it, or the guys that can adapt, or the guys that don't ever want to see a dirt track ever again.
That's a good point. The ability to adapt to your situation and have the wherewithal not to overdrive it. Kind of like Atlanta, in a sense.
Yep. And that's the perfect segue into that. So... What driver? I'm going to start from the bottom of my list and work my way up. Only because this segue was too good. So my care center pick is Kyle Busch. Because what we have learned is that man cannot adapt. Once they took away his practice, he was nothing. And he's going to get frustrated at someone at some point, and that car is going to be parked behind the fence, and they're going to give him an interview. Pretty quick in the race. He's my care center.
Okay. Well, so can I comment on that?
I guess. No, go ahead. Of course. What do you got, buddy?
Is he running truck? Because they're running trucks this weekend, too.
I think he might be.
So one of his comments was it Phoenix? How he commented to the team how whatever they did on the simulator, they didn't translate to the car on race day. Well, so, however he set his settings in iRacing the last night, he if they do anything different, it's bound to be better, because he did not look good.
Nope.
So that's a good... Your logic is sound, my friend. Your logic is very sound.
And I don't get to put Kyle Busch in that position often, right? Yeah. To have a legitimate chance of him ending up in the care center early, so I had to use it.
He's been giving Denny all kinds of riffraff for not showing up for post-race meetings and stuff at the Gibbs headquarters there lately. So maybe Denny will run through him like he did the other Bush boy last weekend.
Yeah, 2-for-1 deal. Let's go.
Get them both.
Get them up. He just mixed up his KBs, you know?
Yeah, wrong guy. Sorry.
Yeah, wrong guy. All right, so I got my dark horse. Also an ex-Eldor winner. I got Bubba Wallace in the 23 car.
Woo! Okay.
When he won in the truck, I think he was new to that team also. I think if I read that right. So, with that both being said, he's got a new team this year. No one's been there. And I think he's going to put on a show. So, I definitely expect a top 10 out of Bubba.
Yeah. That's interesting. Bubba Wallace, so that he won in, I think he won Eldora in like 14.
Yep.
Second race. Yeah. And fun fact on that, though, from my notes here is he won $309,000 from that win.
Did he really?
Good day.
Sign me up, buddy.
Good day.
Could you imagine? God. Yeah. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate that, man. So my race winner, literally before this recording, I literally just looked at the names and read one that I kind of liked or kind of knew, and I knew he wasn't running in the cup, right? So I went with the number 77 car, driven by Stuart Friesen. He's going to be our race winner.
I was going to say he won the last race at Eldora,
and the man's got 230 sprint car wins.
Oh boy.
Oh,
I think we're going to see something. Fun fact, his wife is trying to enter the race also. She's going to try to race her way in too.
That's cool.
That's a good question. Yeah. So how many cars are participating in the heat racing?
Go ahead, Brent.
You got 4 heat races, 10 cars apiece. 40 cars. But they, on the NASCAR's website, 10 cars apiece in heat races 1, 2, and 3 and 9 in qualifying race 4. They don't state how many they're going to take to the main.
So in a traditional sense, there can be up to 40 entries on race day into the actual race. Mm-hmm. That's the maximum number of cars I think they'll take. Aside from the 500. I think it's a little, maybe it could be more than the 500.
I think they're taking 40.
Okay.
I think they're taking them all, taking the full gauntlet for a non.
I'm excited because there's legitimately going to be practice, qualifying, the whole gamut of a traditional NASCAR weekend, which we have not seen for a while.
Oh, I know, so,
Aside from Daytona this year, but
the weather's going to be crappy out here where we are, so perfect for racing.
When does that start? So on Friday?
So yeah, we'll give the rundown. So what we're going to see is what does it say? I'm reading as I'm talking here, guys. Sorry. So it looks like the truck. Is that truck that's going to on Friday, 4 o'clock?
Friday has to be a packed day because they're running trucks on Saturday.
Okay. So yeah, that would make sense then. Yep. No, this is all screwed up. So ignore my list here. I don't have it. Sorry.
It's all good. Yeah. So it's more than likely. I mean, well, I know there's obviously been stuff going on at Bristol for the last like 2 or 3 weeks at this point. Last week, and a lot of Cup guys were utilizing their private jet frequent flyer miles, and back and forth all weekend. Kyle was one of them. He was racing in trucks, or he was racing at Bristol on Friday night in an event, and obviously at Atlanta for trucks on Saturday. Then that night he went back to Bristol, raced again.
Gosh. Yeah.
And then he was back on Sunday, obviously, for the Cup race. So, good thing he's got that Cessna sponsorship.
Yeah. Put that to good use.
Yeah, for sure. Cashing in.
Oh, it's awesome.
It's going to be good. I am excited. Obviously, I said I wasn't in the beginning, but I am definitely excited now about how this could play out on the entertainment side of the business. So we'll see. I think regardless of what happens, I would like to see them do it at more of a local style field track versus Bristol. Idea was you could have had a lot more fans here, not being COVID, and that would have been a sight to see for sure. It's NASCAR. I think what we're learning is right. Like the whole, like for me anyway, regular sports, the fans play a role in the entire scenario. Like crowd noise is a thing. At NASCAR,
sure,
it's not that way. You know, I could really give a damn if there's one fan or 150,000 fans in the stands because it's the cars.
They're making their own noise. It's generating it itself.
Yeah, we've talked about that already, right? As an influential thing to any NASCAR experience, it's the noise. There's nothing else that sounds like it. So whether it's a big track or small track, don't make no difference.
I'm with you. Yeah, it's going to be a good one. It's I wasn't, Adam, to share your sentiment, I wasn't about this dirt stuff at Bristol, right? Like we discussed, but I'm on board, man. I think it's going to be a good race.
Some good stuff. Just some numbers for you. They brought in 23,000 cubic yards of dirt onto Bristol Raceway, equivalent of 7 Olympic sized swimming pools or 149,851 kegs of beer.
Oh,
looking at volumes. So that's how much dirt they brought in. They started in January.
They started in January.
Speaking of beer, I'm fresh out of heavies, so I'm gonna have to buy a. I might want to think about buying 2 cases because this could get interesting.
Yeah, it's a packed race weekend, man. So
might be more than a 3-to-5 event, you know.
Might be more. Oh, can you imagine? I can't fall asleep though. I don't think I will though. I think this will keep me up for show.
Get your rest on Saturday night. Get to bed early.
I will. I will.
Prepare yourself.
It's way past my bedtime right now. So.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Tough.
Well, we should probably call it then, right? There's going to be a lot of... I think we'll certainly have some storylines to talk about next week.
Absolutely.
We sure will. And if we come back and say that was the most boring race we've ever seen, I think we'll be liars. So
we'll see. Yeah. Well, guys, what's the saying? What's the closeout?
Got to keep the shiny side up and the rubber side down. Everybody have a great race weekend, and I look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, gents. Have a good night.
All right, we'll see you.
Go 19. Go 19. All right, see you guys. Go 19. See ya.